Good morning. We'll be looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Not the last time ever, but for the last time for a while maybe. We're wrapping up this section of 1 Corinthians. And it was read for us this morning. The section that we'll be dealing with this morning is verses 25 through 40, marriage in times of suffering. So here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 25, here's Paul is addressing another question that these Corinthian brethren have asked him. And as we've noted throughout the study, we sometimes have to infer by the answer that Paul is giving as to what issue it was that the Corinthians had. And so verse 25 says, Now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one by whom the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. And if you notice right off the bat, my translation is a little bit different. I'm reading from the English Standard Version, and it's different than what Michael read from this morning. If you're reading from the New American Standard Version, New Revised Standard Version, New King James Version, International Version, I just said it. That's what it translated as. Those versions use the word virgin. And we need to define what that means. I think most of us think we know what that word means. But in the context here of what Paul is talking about, you may think that, well, that means he's talking to those who are not married. And in a sense, that is exactly what he's talking about. But we need to remember that back in verses 8 and 9, he addressed those who were unmarried. If you look back at verse 8 of chapter 7, to the unmarried and to the widows, I say it is good for them to remain single as I am, but if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. So here is something to think about in regard to who is he talking about here when he uses this word virgin. And as you can see with the translation that I'm using, you can already get head start on that about what he's talking about. But let's look at why. Because verse 27 says, are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Well, how would a virgin, someone who is unmarried, be bound to a wife? You know, that doesn't make sense that somebody who is unmarried would be bound. And so what we see here is that the way to translate this is those who are engaged to be married. Now, in our world, being engaged usually means that a couple is going to be married. You know, sometimes that engagement is broken off. But if you recall, in the ancient world, the engagement or the betrothal means that you were in a covenant to be married. And to separate from that engagement required divorce. And it doesn't mean that they were actually married yet or had consummated that marriage. But if you remember in Matthew chapter 1, that Joseph believes that Mary has been unfaithful. She is betrothed to him, and it says that he is going to divorce her quietly. Well, how can he divorce her if they're not married? Well, they are betrothed. They are intending to get married. And that's the way that we see that happening in those days. So when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the situation that makes sense is this is a question about a man and a woman who are betrothed. And so when you see that word in some translations, virgin, substitute the word betrothed because that really fits the context of what Paul is talking about here. They are legally bound to marriage, yet not married yet. And so concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one by whom the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. And so there's some aspects that we want to consider here about what Paul is saying. First of all, what Paul says here in verse 25 is that he is not giving a command from the Lord. He's giving his judgment about the scenario that they've asked about. And so if you skip to verse 40, he says, yet in my judgment she is happier if she remains as she is, and I think I too have the Spirit of God. When you read that paragraph, you see that Paul is not binding his advice here as a command of God, but he's asking these or advising these Corinthians regarding these betrothal situations in their current distress. So that kind of gives a little introduction as to what we're talking about here. So this coming distress, and I can't tell you what that was. You know, if it's some kind of persecution that that was going to be arising. This is probably 15 years before the destruction of Jerusalem. I don't know how concerned the Corinthians would be about that at this time. So there's something that's happening or something that's going on, maybe some kind of persecution that is impending that Paul is referencing, but it's a time of distress. And so Paul's directions here are understood in the light of that distress. That's why we're calling this lesson Marriage in the Times of Suffering, for this is the occasion that Paul wrote this. In verses 26 through 28, he says, I think that in the view of this present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. And so if he's talking to the betrothed, if you're engaged, stay engaged. Are you bound to a wife? Are you engaged to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. And so you see how when we focus on those that are betrothed and those who are engaged to be married, that really fits the context of what he is talking about. If you are bound, that is, if you're betrothed to be married, do not seek to be free from that engagement. I'm not telling you to change that, he says. He says in verse 28, it's not a sin if people get betrothed, and when they are betrothed, they get married. But he's explaining here why that may not be a good thing to do right now because of whatever this current distress is. So if you read on, verse 29, this is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it, for the present form of this world is passing away. And so the reason that Paul is concerned about them getting married was this coming crisis, because he's desiring to spare them of these worldly troubles that he is expressing here. This might seem a little bit confusing to us, but Paul, explains what he means here in verse 29. He says, the time of distress is coming and you need to be ready for that time of distress. It's going to be a time of upheaval. And verses 29 through 31 here, it kind of pictures life as you know it being completely turned upside down. Everything that you think about your life right now, whatever situation that you're in, your present circumstances, be ready for it to change. And your attention and your focus, it needs to be placed completely on the Lord. Because, why? Because this present form of the world is passing away. Things are going to change for you and you need to be prepared for that. So that's what Paul is saying here. So I think we can safely assume that there is some kind of serious persecution that is going to arise against these Christians. And Paul is preparing them to know that what the life that you enjoy now is not going to be the case very soon when this crisis arises. And so you need to be prepared for things to get worse or lose it all. Maybe even your spouse, maybe even your wealth, because he says, those who mourn as though they were not mourning, those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, those who buy as though they had no goods. Things are just going to be topsy-turvy, turns upside down. And so this leads into this concern that Paul has about those who are betrothed getting married. He says the unmarried man during this time of crisis, what does he need to worry about? Well, he just worries about himself. A lot of women say, well, that's what men do anyway, even if they are married. But that's not what they should be doing. And the unmarried man during the time of crisis will only need to worry about one thing, and that's pleasing the Lord. So when this persecution and distress hits the Christians, the only thing that they need to worry about is doing what the Lord commanded them to do. He said, but those that are married, there may be more things that they need to be concerned about. Those who are married are going to be concerned about their spouses. They're going to be concerned about their families. And so in a time of persecution, it's much more difficult when you have to look after not only your welfare, but the welfare of those for whom you are responsible. For example, when I got married, I stuck with my job at EBSCO for a long time. And I thought about it many times that there were times that I wasn't happy, times when things were not going the way that I wanted them to, that if I had been single, I might have job hopped and just seen what else there was out there. Maybe that was a mistake, who knows. But I had a responsibility to provide for my household, to provide for my kids. And, you know, when your kids are in school in a certain school district, you don't want to just be hopping all over the United States looking for one thing after another. I know sometimes people do that, but what I'm saying is that I had a totally different outlook on my work and my work responsibility and my stability because I was married, and it was a different attitude than what I had when I was single. You know, I waited a while before I was older when I got married, so I had a little bit of work experience under my belt and had, you know, hopped around a little bit in jobs. But when I was married, I settled down. So here, what we see is that people's responsibilities and their attitudes toward the world, the attitudes toward things that they need to take care of, it changes. You know, when you're married and compared to when you are single. And we need to understand that we have responsibilities. So Paul is simply observing this truth, that this impending crisis, whatever it was, would be much more difficult, you know, to endure physically and spiritually if you're married rather than single. That's the advice that he is given. So, and let's read on. Verse 32. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord, but the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. Now, I want you to notice here how this advice is a little bit counter to what you saw at the beginning of the chapter where Paul was talking about the good things about marriage. And that, and of course, we referenced before that the one thing that God saw in the creation that was not good was that man was alone. And so this is not saying that marriage is not a good thing. You still need to read all this within the context of Paul saying that there's a problem here. There's a current distress. And in light of the things that the persecution that you're going to endure, it might be helpful for you not to, if you're not married yet, you might want to hold off on that because of the situation. And he's telling, if you're betrothed, don't get out of that situation. If you're married, you're not going to get out of marriage. But if you're single and have no plans to get married, maybe you should hold off on those plans because of the current distress. That's what he is saying. So he wants people to have an undivided devotion to the Lord. And this crisis would tempt them no longer to have that undivided devotion to the Lord. And he's saying that verse 35, I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and secure your undivided attention to the Lord. That is the point that he's making. He doesn't want people's loyalties to be divided. He wants to ensure that the Christians have an undivided devotion to the Lord, whether you're single or whether you're married. Now, one side point that we can make here is that sometimes I believe those that are married will put a lot of emphasis on their family. In fact, there's an organization called Focus on the Family. Do we need to focus on our family? Certainly we do. We don't need to neglect our family. We're commanded by the Lord to be husbands, to be wives, to be parents and children. And children, we all have responsibilities in these various roles. But it is good to note here that Paul has a concern in these with these Christians that when the time of crisis comes, that there's other things to focus on besides the family. He wants them to have an undivided devotion to the Lord. Sometimes people will use family as some kind of trump card for not doing something that God would have them to do. I can't count the number of times that my dad mentioned that people would not show up at services because they had family in town. There are a lot of things that irritated him, but that was one of them. What do you think he said about that? Well, if they have family in town, why don't they bring them to services? Why would you not come to services? Why would you miss services because you have family in town? Or Christians who have a loved one pass away and they set up the viewing for 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. Or and make it inconvenient for people to keep their responsibility to the Lord. But, well, that was the only time the funeral home had. We had family coming in from out of town, and it'd make it inconvenient for them if we did it at some other time. I don't know all the reasons that people choose to do the things that they do, but sometimes it makes you wonder why people feel like they can put their family ahead of God and make it hard for family members to serve God faithfully. Family is not a trump card that comes above everything else. And Jesus repeatedly taught the need to forsake your family to be his disciple. And so, the sad thing here is that Paul is concerned that they are going to lose their undivided loyalty to the Lord because of their families, during this time of crisis. It shouldn't be that way. We need to be devoted to the Lord, and we can be devoted to our families at the same time. Those things don't have to conflict. So nothing can ever come before the Lord. It's the first commandment that God gave to Israel on Mount Sinai. So we need to remember not to forsake Him and not to let family get in the way of service to God. The next point that Paul makes here in verses 36 through 38 is similar to what he's already said in verse 36. If anyone thinks he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, that his passions are strong and it has to be, let him do as he wishes, let him marry, it is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity, but having his desire under control, and has determined in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. Again, Paul is referencing and talking about this time of distress and what ought to be done under these conditions. But he's giving a word of caution. If you can't control yourself, one thing about being married is that is the place where you can fulfill those desires. And those that are betrothed, even though they have made a commitment to each other, they are not in the situation yet where they can fulfill those desires. And certainly that is something that needs to be understood today. Because there are many who feel like they are justified, or they feel like it's less of a sin for them to engage in sexual activity because they're engaged, or because it's their girlfriend, or it's their boyfriend that they've been with for such a long time. Even though these are betrothed, and as we've already seen, betrothal was a very serious thing in those days. But it didn't mean that they were able to have those relations yet, because Paul says, if you're betrothed but you can't control yourself, you ought to go ahead and get married. Why? Because marriage is the place where you can fulfill those desires. Betrothal's not the place where you fulfill those desires. So Paul addresses that here. It may be better for you to choose not to get married at this time because of this crisis, but I don't want you to succumb to sexual immorality because you can't control yourself or because you're waiting. And so Paul addressed that in the first 7 verses of the chapter as well. he desired that they exercise self-control. And he's talking about the same thing here. He's saying it's not a sin for you to get married. It's a sin if you're engaging in sexual immorality, sexual relations before marriage. That's a sin, but it's not a sin for you to be betrothed and for you to go ahead and get married. But I think under the present conditions that you might be better off to be single. So you just consider this. Consider that this couple is legally bound to each other to be married. They're still not to have sexual relations until they're married. I know I've repeated that several times, but it's something that needs to be understood today, because there are many that feel justified in engaging that kind of behavior because they are engaged. In verses 39 and 40, it says, a wife is bound to her husband as long as she lives, or as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet in my judgment, she is happier if she remains as she is, and I think I too have the Spirit of God. So here Paul has final words concerning marriage, and it's a great summary of the marriage law. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. What can we infer from that? Well, marriage is for life. Don't get divorced, as we've already noticed in this chapter many times. So when you marry, you are staying together for life. You're entering into a covenant. In the marriage covenant, you're not looking to get out of that relationship. You're committing to stay. And Paul says, just like he says in Romans chapter 7, that when your spouse dies, the bond of marriage dissolves. The marriage dissolves when a spouse dies, and so if her husband dies, she's free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. This verse, only in the, where it says only in the Lord, is one that is interesting to talk about. And the most natural reading of that is that she's to marry a Christian. She's to marry somebody that's in that same relationship. Now, if we look back at the chapter, we see that those that were married to unbelievers were not to break up those marriages. And you see Paul addressing how they need to deal with that situation. If the unbeliever leaves, let him leave. And so you can see from what has been said before that kind of relationship that they find themselves in, mostly because they were probably both unbelievers at some point, and one of them became a Christian and the other one didn't, that is fraught with problems. And so the most natural reading of let her marry whom she wishes, only in the Lord, is that she doesn't need to be in that same kind of situation that Paul's already addressed that's messy. I will tell you, though, that there are people that disagree about what this phrase means, and I'm not going to go into any detail about this. I will give you a good article, if you want to read it, that I feel does a good job of explaining each one of these interpretations of this passage, and it gives pros and cons. But here's the three ways that this can be interpreted. Number one, widows can only remarry Christians. Number two, widows could only remarry Christians because of the present distress, but that doesn't apply now. Or number three, that in the Lord means to marry according to the law of God. And so those are the three different ways that people interpret this. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I don't agree with number two, because I think you get into a big mess with the scriptures when you try to say, well, you know, I know it says this, but that was only for that present time, and that doesn't apply to me now. Number three, that they have to marry in the Lord and according to the law of God, that certainly applies. That this widow can't marry whoever she wants. You can't marry somebody who doesn't have the right to be married. You know, marrying the Lord implies that you're going to marry somebody for whom you've got the blessing of God to be in that relationship. And I also tell you that widows marrying a Christian makes a lot of sense based on what Paul has said about the problems that believers and unbelievers had. That's something that you can study, and I'll give you some resources to look at if you'd like that. But I just wanted to throw that out there, that people have disagreement about what in the Lord means there. But think about this. Who do you want to marry? Paul has talked here about the reasoning for staying single, that they might be able to, during this present crisis, devote themselves more to the Lord. Those that are getting married, what's one of the most important things that they can do? They can have somebody by their side that's going to help them stay devoted to the Lord. Do we want somebody that's going to pull us away from our responsibilities to the Lord, or do we want somebody that's going to help us? Do we want somebody that's going to help us go to heaven, or somebody that's going to deter us from that? I know that we can point to many examples of those who married a non-believer or a non-Christian, and they were able to convert their husband or wife. And that's a wonderful thing. And Paul talks about that too in chapter 7, when he encourages those who are with unbelievers not to depart, because of your good influence, your good example, you may save your children, you may save your husband. But it should also be noted that when we are single, it says a lot about us and our desires and our goals in life if we are choosing somebody that's going to help us to go to heaven or somebody that's going to hurt us in that. So we need to think about those things. We've said a lot here in chapter 7 over the last few weeks. So I'd like to give a conclusion of the things that we've noted in this chapter. Number one, Paul says you can live a single life and be pleasing to the Lord, but this means that you'll need to exercise self-control and that you'll need to remain sexually pure. Number two, sexual relations is a right and a blessing of marriage that is not to be withheld. A husband and wife are not to withhold themselves from each other. They're not to cause their spouse to not be able to fulfill those desires in marriage, and to cause be a stumbling block for them in that regard. Number three, Paul said that marriage is for life. He said that even in regard to those who are married to unbelievers. There may have been those that were Christians that thought, well, you know, my spouse is an unbeliever, that gives me the right to leave them. He said, no, it does not. If they leave you, then let them go, but don't you leave them. Don't divorce your spouse. Divorce is a sin. Marriage is a covenant that's not to be broken. Number four, Paul said, if you do divorce, you must remain unmarried or be reconciled to your former spouse. The exception to this, it's found in Matthew chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 19. If your spouse has committed sexual immorality and you divorce them for that cause, then you can remarry. I'm just going to tell you what it doesn't say. If you go back and read Matthew chapter 5 and Matthew chapter 19, Jesus did not say, you can divorce, even if it's not for sexual immorality, and you can wait around for 4 or 5 years and wait for your former spouse to commit sexual immorality, and then you can divorce them mentally, and then you have the right to remarry because you waited long enough for them to go and do what they shouldn't have done. That's not what Jesus said. And we don't get to redefine what Jesus said. He said, if your spouse commits adultery and you divorce them for that cause, meaning that is the cause. So just remember that. There's all kinds of situations that people get themselves in. They're not happy with this or that. They're not happy with the way their spouse spends money. They're not happy with their job. Well, I'm just not going to cooperate with them anymore. I'm going to make life miserable, and hopefully they will go and commit adultery, and then I'll have the right to remarry. You've put them in the position to do that. There's all kinds of things that people try to do to get around what Jesus clearly stated. So just read what Matthew 5 and Matthew 19 says in regard to that. If you do divorce, you must remain unmarried to be reconciled to your spouse. Number 5, if you remarry and the cause of divorce was not sexual immorality, you're now committing adultery. And for that adultery to stop, you need to sever the sinful marriage and apply what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7, remain unmarried or be reconciled. Number 6, if you are married to an unbeliever, you're to remain in the marriage. Number 7, if an unbeliever divorces the Christian for being a Christian, you need to remain unmarried or be reconciled. Again, what that says is if the unbeliever leaves you, Paul said, let him leave, but you must remain unmarried or be reconciled. You do not have the grounds to remarry if your spouse deserts you. Number 8, if your spouse dies, you have the right to remarry, but you're still required to follow all of God's marriage laws. So that's basically what we have went over in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. I hope that the study has been plain and it's been clear, and that when we're all said and done with this, you don't come away and say, well, now we know all of what Randy thinks about marriage. I hope that you see that we know what Paul taught about marriage by the inspiration of God. Because it doesn't really matter what I think. What matters is what God thinks and what God taught us. And we need to apply that, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, whether it puts us in a situation that we don't like or puts our family in a situation that we don't like. We need to understand and be obedient to what God has to say about marriage. If you're subject today to the invitation, if you are in need of becoming a Christian, perhaps you have not been buried in baptism and arose to walk a new life, or if you started that life and haven't been faithful, if we can help you in any way, we'd invite you to come while we stand together and sing.